the show where we tour the different cultures Pierce's population has to offer and discuss what makes each cultural makeup unique. I'm your host, Jira Nakash. Today is Wednesday, March 8th, and it is 3:20 p.m. Last week, at the end of episode one, I said I would be joined by Professor Jennifer Rosenberg, whose intercultural communications class inspired this show's topic. Unfortunately, Professor Rosenberg had a meeting today, so she will be joining us next week instead. That said, I am very excited to welcome Yeprem Davoodian to the show. Mr. Davoodian is an assistant professor of communications here at Pierce and has also been director of our honors transfer program for a little under a year now.
Correct.
And we will be exploring Armenian culture together in today's episode. How are you, Mr. Davoodian?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
You have a very interesting name.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean anything?
Not particularly. It's my grandfather's name and it passed down to me. And there's some history behind it, but that can take up probably a whole other show.
So no direct translation of the meaning.
No, not on my knowledge. I don't know. No, yeah.
I know having a unique name in the United States always means funny mispronunciation stories,
mm-hmm.
and I'm willing to bet your name's been butchered in the past.
Oh, plenty of times.
Do you have a go-to, like a Starbucks name, as I call it?
I do. My middle name.
What's your middle name?
Pierre.
Oh, there we go. So it's pretty easy to...
Oh, yeah.
Pierre. What have you been mistakenly called before?
Oh, my goodness. Stuff I can say on air. Yeprum.
Substitute teachers.
Oh, yeah.
And first days.
Yeah.
Well, now I know what not to call you, so that's good. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where were you born?
Sure. I was born in Iran. We moved.
What city specifically in Iran?
Mashhad. So it's outside of the main city, the capital. And then we lived in Tehran. There, and then we moved to the States.
Okay. Were you raised there? Were you raised here?
No, I was raised here. I moved here roughly in 1985.
1985.
And about 4 years old. Moved to the Valley, Sherman Oaks, and then again moved from there and raised in Southern California in different parts.
Okay. Why did you and your family decide to leave Iran?
Well, at the time, the revolution had taken place, and although we weren't in any particular quick immediate danger, due to our Armenian heritage and other social aspects and issues over there, my parents decided to get up and find a new life somewhere else, and so we decided to head west, I guess, from there, I would say. Maybe west-east, yes.
So you were 4 years old. Did you have any siblings with you that left with you?
I did. An older brother.
Older brother. How many years are there between you
3 guys?
3 year
difference.
Okay. Are you guys close?
We are.
Nice. Yeah. So you, your brother, and your parents. Did you leave with any other families or friends? Were you guys traveling just the four unit?
It was just the four unit. Uh-huh.
Okay. And what you said that was in 1985 and you were 4 years old.
Roughly.
And that's kind of an intense reason to leave. I mean, the revolution was not an easy time for that country. Do you remember much of that whole process?
I do. I do remember quite a bit. And the revolution had happened in 79, roughly. But we were at war also with Iraq and so forth. And some of the stuff I do remember at the time when we were in Tehran is some of the missiles that were flying overhead. I don't know what types they were, but I remember because we used to cuddle down in our, we were fortunate to have an underground garage, and we'd all cuddle down, and our parents would, guard us and shade us from, any harm. But that, I remember us, going through airports. I remember the plane we came to the States with, bits and pieces, but they're all sort of formulate in regards to my experiences.
Right. I mean, Will, you were very young when it happened, so that's cool that you remember bits and pieces of that very intense experience.
Thank you.
Did the chain of events, other than the reason to leave, did it impact you in any serious way?
If you look, when I reflect back, I think I have a better understanding in regards to being displaced, especially with our socioeconomic or social political realm right now. I understand the empathy that people have who move to the States. And it can be traumatic for students. For my wife, it was more traumatic because they went through the same process.
Your wife is also from Iran?
Correct, yeah.
Armenian. And also from Armenian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So for her, it was more traumatic because it was more intense for her. But, you know, it's built that empathy that I have for, you know, just for people who need to move and change, you know, places where they live.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I know there were many religious elements to the mm-hmm. Iranian revolution. It's sometimes referred to as the Islamic Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right. So what kind of religious upbringing did you have, if at all?
Yeah, sure. No, we are Christian Orthodox, and I say we, my family. Mm-hmm. Although we haven't been religious to the extent of, you know, going to mass or all the religious holidays, you know, we're believers. And, you know, we believe in a higher power, but yeah, Christians.
Christian upbringing.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And did you come straight to the United States upon leaving Iran, or tell me the story of how you got to living in Los Angeles?
Sure. There's two parts of this. So we went to Switzerland to obtain visas and so forth. First time we were denied, and I went back to Iran, and then went back again to Switzerland. Finally, we're given, you know, approval to enter the United States. Moved here, and over the years, you know, attained citizenship.
How long were you in Switzerland for?
It wasn't much. Probably anywhere, I would say, I can't remember specifically, but anywhere from, the stints were anywhere from 3 to 6 months.
Okay, so a few months.
A few months, mm-hmm.
Do you remember anything about Switzerland that kind of sticks out?
I do. We were staying at it was a hotel, and so we were boarded there. And I remember the hotel, and I remember some of the other families that were Armenian from Iran who were staying there. And interestingly, the family that was living next to us is my dentist currently. And
oh, no way.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Did you guys know each other from Iran, or did you meet at the hotel in Switzerland?
I don't know if my parents knew them, but obviously from my experience, that's where we met at the hotel.
At the hotel. That's mm-hmm. where your first memory of meeting mm-hmm. them is. And correct. Now they live here as well.
They live here, yeah. Mm-hmm. They have children roughly around my age as well, a daughter and a son.
That's very cool.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm assuming that when you were in Iran, mm-hmm. You didn't speak English at home. I'm assuming that. I don't know if that's actually true. Mm-hmm. Did you speak English at home?
In Iran, it was Armenian mm-hmm. Primarily. And then I was young, so, you know, my parents spoke Farsi, so...
Armenian and a little bit of Farsi.
A little bit of Farsi. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Definitely. What was the adjustment like going from speaking, you know, Armenian and Farsi to speaking English?
I was young, so I think my adjustment was a little bit easier. For my brother, if I can speak on him, I think it was a little bit more difficult because he was older. So when we moved here, I think I was in first grade I got into.
You said you were four, so when you moved here, five. It was like kindergarten, first grade-ish?
Kindergarten, first grade, yeah. And for him, it was a little bit more difficult. And back then, we didn't have the educational programs that we have now, like ESL and so forth. So I think it was harder for him to adjust. But for me, a little bit more smoother.
What about your parents? Do you remember any struggle with that in terms of...
No, my father was in the airline industry, so he traveled a lot and he knew a little bit of English. My mother also was a traveler, so she knew English, Farsi, Armenian, and so... Although, again, they do have accents still to this day.
Accents are cool.
Yes, it tells us who we are, where we come from.
Exactly. Yeah. It gives you a little clue of mm-hmm. something you can't see, per
no.
se.
Yeah.
What did your dad do in the airline industry? He was a pilot?
He wasn't a pilot, no. He worked more of management in regards to, I think, stewardess and so forth. Though, so he was, at the time, I think it was actually Iran Air he was working for. So he was doing various things with them.
Mm-hmm. And have you, as a family, or you specifically, have you retained any of your native language?
So Armenian, yes, because we spoke that throughout. My Farsi is very broken. It's very one-sided. I understand people talk slowly. Harder for me to respond.
That's usually the case, is that it's easier, regardless mm-hmm. of what language it is, to understand, like, based on context clues, facial mm-hmm. expressions, whatever it is, it's a lot easier to understand somebody than it is necessarily to respond to them.
Correct, yeah, and that's, yeah, it's interesting, because you sit back and, like, this is all auditory, I've learned this by that, so.
Right, so you speak Armenian fluently?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how do you maintain it?
How do I maintain it? Well, my wife's Armenian. When I speak with my mother, my father, mainly it's broken, but it's Armenian English. And then I do have Armenian friends and so forth. We don't watch any Armenian TV, but just through dialogue with other folks.
Okay, so practicing with the people you know. Do you know how to read and write in Armenian as
no
well?
No reading and writing.
Were you able to learn any of it or get better at it throughout high school, throughout your education, throughout college?
No. When we moved here, we were usually sometimes parents, Armenian parents, you know, enroll their students into Armenian school and so forth to obtain that. But we didn't do that. But it's not that it got better. I think it's gotten worse, I'll be honest, just because, you know, as with assimilation and years go by, I tend to lose certain words.
I think a lot of people do when you're trying to, you know, it depends on, with language, it depends on what you're surrounded by.
Correct.
And so if you're surrounded primarily by a certain language, that's what's going to dominate. Okay, so how has knowing another language maybe benefited you?
Well, I think it just allows us to think differently, you know. And again, I'm not a linguist, but the way we think about concepts, the way they are stated and said, gives us a little bit of leeway and wiggle room to better understand the world and other people in other languages.
So do you think that it's helped you in terms of picking up any other languages that you might be interested in learning?
I haven't really given it that thought, but looking back on it, I love Spanish. I mean, you know, I took Spanish in high school. I took it during college. Don't ask me to.
I took it in high school, too, but I am not about to speak on air.
But there is a love, because I think language it is beautiful. Depending where you are, where you come from, people have those, you know, inklings.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So since you and your family left, have you ever gone back and visited Iran?
I wouldn't be able to, I can't. I would love to, but because I didn't complete military service or duty, that might be an issue. And there's probably ways that you can go about that, but I have not, no.
Is military duty required in Iran?
I believe so, yes.
At what age, do you know?
I think it's 18.
At age 18?
Don't quote me on that, but I think it is 18.
So it's like, I'm Israeli, so it's like the IDF in Israel.
Correct.
You have to join the IDF at age 18. So do you know what parts specifically in Iran, you said that you lived in Tehran for a little bit, and what was the name of the other city?
I was born in Mashhad.
Mashhad.
But we had family there, but majority of our family was Tehran, so we were in Tehran.
But you've never visited, but do you know if that area is known for anything special?
Architecture, I know Mashhad is, but that's about it, I think, yeah.
So if you don't do military service, are you not allowed to visit ever again, or is there a certain age where that's no longer a requirement? Because I think in Israel, the age requirement, again, don't quote me on this, but I think it's the age is 32, and then after that you can visit, you can stay for as long as you want without being recruited.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's the case.
I don't know if that's the case, but I know my brother, who's a little bit older than me, visited there, and I don't know how long this ago. This was probably maybe, I don't know, 8-9 years ago. And he was able to get documentation to visit, but he was able to forego that process by purchasing some sort of document, as you know, there's some always loopholes.
Right.
But
did they give him trouble on the way out or something like that? Okay.
No, not there, but outside the country they did.
Okay. Do you hope to go back at some point?
I was so young. The only thing I remember is our home, which is, you know, it's been sold off. We no longer have it in our street. And that would probably be the only reason for me to just go back and just see the old neighborhood. But from what I hear, the neighborhood has changed too.
Right. Well, it's been a while from the time that you were last there. Where does most of your family live? Did you leave any family behind there, or is it here?
I have two cousins and my aunt, and a few other close relatives. Not close, but I would say close relatives. And but majority of everyone is California, Florida, New York.
How many siblings do your parents have, like, that were either there or here?
My mom has one sibling who's there and one sibling who's here. And my father's side, everyone is here.
Everybody moved with him, or was it a gradual process after?
Sporadic. Before and after, we have family who moved here in the early 70s and so forth. Yeah.
When you say here, do you mean the United States?
United States.
Okay, so are they all over?
They're all over, yes.
Okay, so your grandparents, did they stay behind?
My mom's mom and dad stayed behind. My grandfather unfortunately passed during that time, and my grandma also passed. But they were there. But my dad's parents here.
They moved with you.
They moved. They moved here earlier than us. Earlier. And so they were here in Florida, and then now in California.
Interesting. So one thing that I want to ask about is you were born in Iran, but you said you don't identify as Iranian. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
I would say when people ask, you know, what do you consider yourself to be? My students always ask me. I say, well, I'm American. Ethnically, I am Armenian. I have a nationality where I was born in Iran. So I do have that cultural aspects with me of Iran, the language, and so forth. But I strongly identify as being Armenian because that's just my heritage, my ethnicity. So in a way, that's the way I perceive my identity.
So you've never lived in Armenia? Have you ever visited there before?
No, I have not. No.
Do you have a desire to?
I would love to. Yeah, I would.
Why is that?
Number one, we have a rich history, just like a lot of other nationalities and people. But I would like to go back and visit. My brothers visited. I have family who visited and tell me a lot of great things. So just to go see, we know the origination of the Armenian culture and people.
So I've heard that Armenia and Iran share a lot of cultural aspects. Mm-hmm. I read that. Can you share some of those with me?
Sure. Well, food is one, that's that. I would say weddings, I think, culturally. I think we share a lot of things in common.
Like an Armenian wedding and an Iranian wedding would be very similar?
Not very similar, but we do certain things. And again, depending on, you know, what an Armenian from Iran would still celebrate a wedding a certain way, but if someone's from Lebanon or Armenian from Armenia, but since we were born there, we still share a few things.
What would you do at a wedding, for instance?
Oh my goodness! one thing we do is as the groom goes to the bride's house, we show up and there's usually a band there, and they play very unique music. And it's basically calling that I'm here or we're here. So someone opens the door, and it's a playful bribe game and so forth, so I can be allowed to enter the home.
Did you do this with your wife?
We
did. Is that what you're recalling?
Oh, yeah. I'm recalling right now in my mind, yeah. And I think it was interesting. It was good. her aunts were holding the fort down, so I had to make my way through the aunts. It happens like that, and we go and we dance. It's a festive aspect earlier on during the day, and then we celebrate that. And then there's a transition to move towards the church. And in between there, either before the church or after the church and the ceremony, take pictures, a lot of pictures. And then it's the celebration at the end, which everyone mostly shows up for, not the church part or the ceremony part.
The party.
Party, they have fun. They go late night, and I think that's one commonality I think a lot of Persians and Armenians share. And a lot of other cultures, we like to go late night. So
late night.
The wedding ends at, not like a traditional, not all American weddings are like this, but like we go till 2, 3 a.m. So
yeah.
It doesn't have that aspect of like, okay, we're going to take off and go on a honeymoon. It doesn't happen like that.
Right. My one of my best friends in middle school was Persian, mm-hmm. and I remember we would do like the bar bat mitzvah stage, mm-hmm. where everybody had a bar bat mitzvah every other weekend in middle school, and hers went to like 4 a.m. easy, and that was a big deal in sixth grade.
Oh,
you know? You're like, oh my God.
It's interesting how we all share different aspects of our cultures, but there's so many things in common.
Right.
Which is beautiful. Yeah.
I agree. Would you consider Armenian culture to be family oriented?
Oh, yes, definitely.
How does that come through?
Oh, gosh. Double standards. I think that's one thing in
what
regards
do you mean?
To it. It's very strong based in regards to a male role and a female role, which not necessarily what I agree with or and so forth. But I'll give you an example. A lot of times, let's say the boys, the males in the family, if there are siblings that have, brothers and sisters, and age also plays a role, but usually it's expected that the daughter stay at home until she marries, goes off to college, or most likely it's getting married. So there are some double standards, but we are very oriented. We do like spending time together, and there's a lot of stuff that occur. Sundays are big.
Sundays because of church or because of?
For us, for our family, Sundays was a time where we all just get together.
Okay.
And that was a ritual.
Nice. So it's like once a week where you all meet up.
Correct.
Very nice. Okay. You said you identify as Armenian-American. Which mm-hmm. part of you is more dominant, the Armenian part or the American part?
That's a great question. I don't see it as a dominance. I think they work so fluid together. 'Cause being American means being everything.
Right.
And to me, I value all the freedoms, all the liberties that I have, but I also, look at the co-cultural aspects of what it means to be American. And, I bring my ethnicity in there, and that's the fabric of who we are.
Well, both cultures are so prevalent in your life. You mm-hmm. know, you said you grew up with both of them. What do you think one of the most glaring differences is between Armenian culture and American culture? And, there's
the autonomy.
Like the autonomy.
I would say, yes.
What do you mean?
As Americans, we're told to get out there, do what you need to do. But then with the Armenian culture, it's, still, I need you to stay around to help out with the family. So it's like a pull, elastic band where they try to combine and try to juggle both of them. But that's one of the differences.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that you speak both Farsi and Armenian. is there a word or a phrase that you know that doesn't have a direct translation into English?
Yes. More Armenian I speak, Farsi a little less, but I guess there's one in Armenian. And that would be, and I'll try to pronounce it the best that I can, Ashket Luis.
Ashket Luis.
Yeah.
I probably butchered that.
No, it was good. It was pretty good.
What does that mean?
Direct translation?
Yes.
Your eye is light. Or not like it's light in color, but like...
It's a
light,
like a
yeah.
Okay.
Eye and light. And it's a blessing, like something has happened to you or something you've come across and it's like, oh, Ashket Luis, like that's a blessing, good job.
Awesome. Okay. Can you tell me about an Armenian holiday that you enjoy celebrating?
Armenian holiday. Oh my goodness. We do a lot of just religious holidays that are sort of combined, but there's a day. I think it's called Vartivor, and I might be even pronouncing it incorrectly. So if anyone's listening and I did this wrong, my apologies. But it's a day where we splash each other with water. It's a new beginning and so forth.
Is it like a new year? What is it?
It's not a new year, but again, it's one of those things where we've done it so long, and I'm trying to think of the historic aspect, but it's one of those things where it's just a new beginning of things.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, holidays are often associated with food for me, so what's your favorite Armenian food?
Oh, my goodness. Favorite Armenian food,
or one of your favorites?
I think it's a mixture between cultures, but I would say what we say in Armenian, horovats, which is basically kebabs, meats. Yes, definitely.
Lovely. Do you know how to make it?
I can barbecue it, but I can't put it together.
Okay, so you leave that to somebody else.
Yes.
to cook up. Do you have you mentioned some of the traditions, but mm-hmm. are there any superstitions that you can share with me, like an Armenian superstition?
Oh my goodness. The evil eye.
What is that?
Where someone looks envious of you or something like that. And so usually, and I think it correlates with Persian culture too, that it's the evil eye where you want to ward off that evil, and so you do certain things, whether it's, I don't know, some people spit in certain cultures, but there's also a blue eye with that, and I think it's shared by cultures, and
it is we have it too in mm-hmm. Israeli culture.
It's interesting. Yeah,
I have a bracelet that,
nice.
Not on me right now, but yeah. what's one thing that makes you consistently proud of your Armenian culture?
What makes me proud is when I see other the diaspora or second or third generation doing really well, whether it's in education, giving back. That's the most important thing, where people are empathetic and look at the world as something that needs to be contributed to and not taken away from.
That's great. We're almost out of time, but there is one last thing I'd like you to share with me. So tell me one thing you think most people don't know about Armenian culture that you think they ought to know.
Something they don't know about Armenian culture that they ought to know. Some people might know this, but I don't think if we open our houses to you, our hearts to you, you're in there and you're with us forever.
So mi casa, su casa type
exactly,
thing.
That's
yes. not exactly the language.
No, but...
but the same concept.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, well, that is all the time we have today. Thank you so much, Mr. Davoodian, for joining our program. Tune in next week to hear about the intercultural communications class that inspired this show's topic and the professor that teaches the subject, Jennifer Rosenberg. Thank you for listening to Kultur from kpcradio.com. I'm Shirin Akash.